This is a podcast from WILL AM 580. To support our station, please visit www.willpledge.org. That's www.willpledge.org.
This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Wednesday, June 6th. I'm Tom Rogers. Coming up in legal issues in the news, commentator Amy Guida wonders what happens to all that currency when it's run its course and gone old. Also get a forecast for the next couple of days from AM 580's Mike Sola. First, a look at today's news. Illinois legislative leaders have sat down with the governor for a private meeting, the first budget discussions since the Illinois General Assembly moved into an overtime session. We have the latest from Sean Crawford.
Those involved say it was a good starting point, with both Democrats and Republicans laying out their positions. Republicans are in the minority in the legislature, but as lawmakers fail to finish their work on time, additional votes are now needed to pass a budget. Republican House Leader Tom Cross.
There's a lot of talking about where people are, what their positions are, things that should have happened a while ago but didn't. So it's the first step in a fairly long journey.
Complicating the process, the unsolved dilemma over high electric rates. House Speaker Mike Madigan says he wants rates rolled back to previous levels before the General Assembly approves a budget.
There were terribly high rate increases imposed by Ameren. There are probably rate increases on the horizon because of Commonwealth Edison. And there's got to be significant reductions, rollbacks.
However, the Senate president says no one should hold a budget deal hostage. President Emil Jones indicated a rollback measure could come up for a vote soon in that chamber. Talks with the governor and leaders are expected to continue this week. I'm Sean Crawford.
The Champaign City Council has passed a new and bigger city budget. Officials there say it's a budget that reflects the needs of a growing city, as we hear from AM 580's Jim Meadows.
There's $127.5 million for expenditures in the new Champaign City budget, compared to about $105 million approved for the old fiscal year. City Manager Steve Carter says the higher amount is made possible and necessary by the growth of Champaign. He says recently annexed territories are providing new tax revenue and making new demands for city services.
You know, we're looking at the areas to the west. We've had a lot of growth west of Staley Road. We've had growth north of Walmart on North Prospect, new subdivisions coming both those areas west of Parkland College and the Sawgrass and Boulder Ridge areas. So, you know, those subdivisions didn't exist to a large degree 2 or 3 years ago.
Carter says the budget includes money for new police and fire personnel to serve those new parts of the city. Other money is going toward some major construction projects. Road improvements tied to the new Curtis Road interchange, the extension of Olympia Drive, a new downtown parking deck, and the completion of the new Champaign Public Library. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Governor Blagojevich says the state EPA has issued an air construction permit for Taylorville for what could become the nation's cleanest burning coal plant. But proponents say for the power plant to be economically feasible, they need a major change to state energy law. Sean Ali has that story.
Illinois faces an energy catch-22. It's got plenty of coal, but if it burns that coal, it pollutes the air. The Tenaska Company wants to build a plant near Springfield that would use cleaner-burning coal gasification technology. But Tenaska Environmental VP Greg Kunkel says there's a catch.
And in order for us to attract sufficient private capital to finance this multi-billion-dollar cost, we need to enter long-term, regulated, cost-based contracts before the plant is built.
In a nutshell, the proposal would make Ameren and ComEd buy 5% of their electricity from clean coal providers. It would lock utilities into 30- or 40-year contracts. That contradicts the state's current market-based approach, where utilities buy shorter contracts during auctions. I'm Sean Ali.
Meanwhile, one environmental group says Tenaska's proposed coal gasification plant won't do much to improve the environment unless it's carbon neutral. Rebecca Stanfield of Environment Illinois says coal gasification plants don't necessarily cut down on carbon dioxide emissions that could contribute to global warming, even though they do produce less smog, soot, and mercury emissions than other coal-fired plants. The last student to portray Chief Alinawek says he's disappointed with yesterday's dismissal of a lawsuit over the symbol's retirement. But as AM 580's Jeff Bossert reports, he says he still has a role to fill.
Champaign County Judge Michael Jones has dismissed a suit filed by former Chiefs Dan Maloney and Logan Ponce, saying University of Illinois trustees didn't violate a state statute when retiring the chief in February. Jones also says the NCAA didn't violate the students' free speech rights when imposing sanctions on the U of I. Maloney says he hasn't had a chance to talk with his attorney, Brent Holmes, about whether they'll file an appeal. They have 30 days to do so. Maloney says he's disappointed, but says the Chief still has a presence beyond the years of halftime performances.
Whereas the physical representation of Chief Alanowicz is no longer, seems to be no longer, the spirit of Chief Alanowicz is still very much ingrained as part of the university, and that's what I hope to continue to cultivate.
Maloney says he still gives presentations and talks regarding his portrayal of Chief Alanowicz. Judge Jones dismissed a similar lawsuit Tuesday filed by Champaign attorney John Godot, who says he's leaning toward an appeal. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.
A rise in need and changes in food distribution are forcing food banks to find new ways to supply pantries for the needy. The head of the Eastern Illinois Food Bank, Jim Heyer, says economic pressures are prompting more than 34,000 people to seek help at pantries in the food bank's 14-county service area. Heyer says large donors like food manufacturers are sending less unwanted food to charity, so his agency needs to more actively seek out the proper food for their clients.
We're spending a lot more time trying to find local donation sources and spending time holding targeted food drives more than just say, okay, we're going to have a food drive, for example. We've come up with a list called the Super Six, and it's the six items that the food bank needs most to hand out to pantries.
That list includes nearly anything in a can, as well as complete boxed meals and peanut butter. Heyer says the food bank is also buying more food on the wholesale market. He says that's why cash donations are often more efficient than direct contributions of food from individuals. For the latest newscast online, go to will.uiuc.edu/news. This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Tom Rogers. Commentator Amy Guida once found a coin that was barely recognizable, and that got her wondering about whose job it is to cull bad currency. Here's this week's edition of Legal Issues in the News.
I remember well a quarter I once received in change from a bank's drive-through window. It was perhaps the sorriest-looking coin I'd ever seen. The edges were terribly worn, you'd never know it had once boasted a year, and the word Liberty read simply Li. Ponder with me, whose job is it to take these babies out of circulation? The answers to many money questions are found in the law books, of course. Laws on coins and money generally are part of the United States Code and the Code of Federal Regulations. Important issues like what to do with the money little Johnny took the scissors to, and whether you can draw a birthday hat on the George Washington head peering out from a $1 bill without going to prison. My lousy-looking quarter wasn't half of my money troubles. I once found on the street exactly 50% of a banknote. Granted, I was in the Netherlands at the time, and the bill was one from Greece, oddly enough. But had it happened here in the United States with a dollar bill, I could not exchange my half bill for a brand new full one. Under 31 CFR section 100.7, exchange of mutilated paper currency, exchangers need 51% or more of a bill before government officials will buy it. The law is designed that way so that the perfect rip doesn't turn two halves of a $5 bill into $10, of course. Such mutilation of currency must happen fairly often, given the number of laws on the books addressing the issue. And much mutilation must happen in the laundry. Proof? There's a special subsection of the code for those who do not check pants pockets before plunging them into washer water. Run a wallet through the wash cycle and the dry cycle, and the code recommends that you send the wallet with the money stuck therein to the Bureau of the Treasury in Washington, D.C., where mutilated currency examiners will attempt to piece together what remains and exchange it for filthier but full bills. Same with any cut-up currency. Save the pieces, send them in. But before turning the stuff over to the mutilated currency examiners, be certain that you haven't altered the face of any such banknote. That's against the law. Same with coins. You can go to prison if you mutilate, cut, deface, or disfigure currency. Sure, it's only when you do it with the intent to defraud or with the intent to keep the money out of circulation. But with up to 5 years in prison and a fine as the penalty, best to keep George Washington hatless to avoid the issue completely. As for my sorry-looking quarter, I now know that the experts call it an uncurrent coin, meaning a coin that's worn by, best-case scenario, natural abrasion. If I decide that it's past its prime, I can send it to a Federal Reserve Bank, and officials there will exchange it for me, for face value, shipped at my own expense. or I can carefully keep it separate from other coins and return it to the bank, instructing the teller to send it to the Federal Reserve. Which means that you should keep your eyes peeled for one sorry-looking quarter. I put it quickly back into circulation. I'm Amy Guida.
Amy Guida is an assistant professor of journalism and law at the University of Illinois. We're about to warm up in Illinois and Indiana as far as the temperature goes. Today, we'll see a partly sunny sky in most of the two state areas. Northern Illinois may have some scattered showers and thunderstorms this afternoon. The highs today ranging from 75 in northeastern Indiana to 88 in far southern Illinois. Forecaster Mike Solis says it'll be partly cloudy in the north tonight with a few evening showers, elsewhere clear to partly cloudy, with lows ranging from 60 in eastern Indiana to 72 in northwest Illinois. And for tomorrow, turning hot. In northwest Illinois, partly sunny with showers possible in the morning, then showers and thunderstorms arriving in the afternoon, and some of those storms could be severe. Elsewhere tomorrow, though, mostly sunny, windy, and very warm. We'll get our thunderstorms a bit later here in east-central Illinois. Tomorrow's highs ranging from 87 in northwest Illinois to 94 in southern Indiana. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Wednesday, June 6th. You can find podcasts of Focus 580, the afternoon magazine, agricultural programming, and other helpful information on our website, will.uiuc.edu. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.